And now, the Last Word on Habs podcast, brought to you by the Last Word on Sports Network. Let's start the show.
Welcome back to the Last Word on Habs podcast. I'm Connor Lapalme, and as always, I'm joined by Johannes Wilden. Johannes, how are we feeling today?
Connor, the sun is shining, temperatures are rising, and somehow, against all odds, your Montreal Canadiens have made it to the third round. So what are we calling this? We're calling this I've heard it called the Stanley Cup semifinals. It's obviously not the conference championship because it doesn't really mean anything this year given the four new divisions. And then, you know, hey, did you know that originally on the NHL app when you did a bracket, they had sort of the Eastern team staying in the East and the Western team staying in the West. And then at some point it switched over to when we were going to play the winner of Colorado, Vegas.
Vegas.
Are you aware of like the oral history of how that all came about?
I have no idea, because in my head it just made sense that they'd play Boston, New York, or, you know, that kind of thing.
Right.
Just geographically, right. It made sense in my head. And then I found out it was Colorado, Vegas, so I was a little bit more... nervous, I guess, because, you know, if you watched any of that series, I mean, that was a fun brand of hockey to watch. I mean, you know, they're both very highly skilled teams. So I was a little bit more, you know, not concerned, but, oh, this is going to be a little bit different than something from what we've kind of seen. Although, you know, we did see Toronto, and Toronto is probably the closest thing in Canada to those teams.
Right.
But, yeah, I don't know when they switched it. I don't know why they switched it. You can go conspiracy theory all you want and try and say that they set it up so one of those teams had a better chance to make the Stanley Cup Finals. I don't know.
Well, I think here's some good news, though. Like, if somehow we are able to get through Vegas, and I think it's going to be a tight series, I will get to our predictions later, but if we are able to, there's going to be a lot less hours on an airplane in the Stanley Cup Final. And that, I think, is probably a good thing, given that, I don't know about you, but the idea of traipsing halfway across the, you know, continent to play a hockey game at this point is, you know, I guess it's normal in some ways, but it's not necessarily something that we've had to deal with. Do you know if the Canadians are in the U.S. right now? Did they leave yesterday?
I think they already left, yeah, because I remember I saw a report that Jake Evans was traveling with the team, and I would think they want to get there. I mean, obviously not with too much time because there is a lot of trouble to be had in Las Vegas.
Right.
But, you know, I think they're either they're there today and the game's tomorrow, so hopefully there's not too much trouble they can get into.
Good.
And I know, you know, Vegas is officially open, you know, like no rules open. So hopefully the guys are a little bit smart, just because while the vaccines are, everyone's getting vaccinated and all that stuff, doesn't mean you can't still get COVID. It doesn't mean, you know, you can't still transmit it to someone who might not be vaccinated, so...
Yeah, I don't think Vegas is open for those guys. I think the hotel room is open for those guys, and maybe like a common room or something. Like, I have to imagine at this point, making it this far, those guys are laser-like focused in what it's going to take to defeat Vegas.
Well, you hope so. But, I mean, they're also human, right? And when was the last time, especially the guys that are in Canada?
Fair enough,
when was the last time you were able to go out and do stuff, you know? I mean... There's a human element, despite the fact that, you know, they're professional athletes and they have this focus. There's also this sort of want and need as people in general to just sort of want to, it's been a, you know, 18 months of like isolation. So the, you know, to sort of be able to sort of just go out and have a drink at a bar, even the temptation I would imagine is very high. Hopefully, yeah, like you said, they're on kind of a strict sort of curfew or plan, because again, you know, you don't want to have someone come back and test positive, and despite the fact they think all the teams, I think all the players are double vaccinated, you still, I don't think they'll let you play with it if you test positive,
no.
Right? I think they're still doing tests.
Yeah,
so.
And they did only get their shot this week, so, you know, as you know, it's 2 weeks. But the good thing is that after one shot, you're pretty much good, and luckily we don't seem to have the Delta variant in very much in high numbers in this country, at least, or the U.S. or Canada together. Anyway, my friend, how are you? How are you feeling? I mean, are you not?
I mean,
absolutely ecstatic.
Obviously, the way the Winnipeg series ended with a sweep, with a dramatic Game 4 overtime winner. I mean, it was hard not to sort of, you know, it's hard not to be excited and feel feel excited. I mean, you know, the Canadians have made other runs to the, whatever we want to call this, the Eastern, not the Eastern, the semifinals. Or, although I think, sorry, but the interesting thing, though, is if the Canadians beat Vegas, they will win the Clarence Campbell Western Conference. So it would be like the one trophy that they never could win in their history, because they've always been in the East. They could win if they win, if they make it to the Stanley Cup Final, which I think is an interesting little, you know, aside to this whole thing. But I've been feeling pretty good, because despite the fact that, I mean, I think the Jets were a bit overhyped based on what they did to the Oilers, because, you know, we talked about it all season, the Canadians and the Jets kind of played these sort of close and a bit more open games. We said the Jets, for whatever reason, were able to shut down the Oilers, but they had issues on defense. And, you know, they kind of remind me a bit of the Canadians in general, but also the Canadians kind of when Marc Bergevin first took over, where they had some nice pieces, but their defense was a bit iffy. But they had a goalie who could cover up a lot. So, like, Connor Hellebuck, I think, covered up a lot for the Jets, especially in games 3 and 4. You know, it could have been, especially game four, the Canadians were like, that's, I think, the best I've ever seen them play. You know, like the Jets were very fortunate, and, you know, a really bad Carey Price goal is the only reason they were, you know, tied in the game. So, you know, the Canadians just ran them out of the rink, which was nice to see, and it was nice to see that they didn't have a game like that, even though it went into overtime. You know, sometimes those games, you're dominating the game, but you can't get the one extra goal, or you can't win, you know, you can't pull away, and then the other team just gets a stupid bounce. Kind of like what Montreal did to Toronto in game 6. You know, Toronto was kind of putting their foot down and they couldn't score, and then Montreal got their one chance and put it in the net.
Yeah.
So it was nice to see the Canadians could finish the game. They finished it quick in overtime. You know, it was a beautiful goal, a beautiful setup from Cole Caulfield, who just, you know, he picked the puck out of that corner and made a beautiful pass to Toffoli. Yeah, I mean, it's hard not to feel positive. I mean, the one concern now is Jeff Petrie. I don't think he traveled with the team.
Oh, wow.
So maybe I'm going to check now, actually, but last I saw, off Twitter, so Twitter's as reliable as...
it would have made the news if he had. I see that Evans did. So
yeah,
I think the reality is Petrie didn't. And, you know, I think that means hopefully he's back for game 3. The thing that people don't realize, like everyone, I heard a lot of people talking about, oh, well, you know, if he can play through the pain, his fingers are the size of sausages, right? I mean, that swelling dislocated fingers are huge. And so just being able to grip a hockey stick, I think, is a big deal. Hopefully he can come back and contribute in game 3. Obviously, that's a big deal. I just want to go back to the Winnipeg series, because I think the story of that series, honestly, is the psychological meltdown of that team. And I think the Scheifele hit on Evans, the fact that the teammates chirped the Canadians afterward, the fact that Paul Maurice was an uncharacteristic DB in that press conference, the fact that Scheifele, you know, just seemed to refuse to learn the number one law of holes, which is when you find yourself in a hole, stop digging. He just continued to make things worse for himself. And I just honestly believe that there are many players on the Winnipeg Jets who knew that was wrong, who knew it was a big deal, who knew it was a problem, and they just could not psychologically get over the fact that their number one center behaved that way, and they were forced into position to have to defend with the indefensible. And I think ultimately the Jets just collapsed. Has any team swept a team and then been swept? That's got to be some sort of factoid going back, because it just seems like how they were able to dismantle Edmonton in the first round and then were dismantled in the second round is fascinating.
I think I heard someone make an allusion. They mentioned when it had happened last, and I think it's been a while. The Scheifele thing threw the Jets off the rest of the way. You could just tell, because like obviously not having your number one center will definitely have an impact on your roster. But the fact that they could barely generate any offense, I mean, it just seemed like they were a bit defeated's not, maybe, yeah, defeated might be the word, because like you said, having to sort of see your guy do something really dumb, you know, one of your best players essentially take himself out of a series, and, you know, it's a little happy considering the way he acted after the series, Mark Scheifele, that he still has one game left to serve on a suspension next year, because, you know, he's refusing to see he'd think he did anything wrong. You know, you heard the thing in the press conference where he's like, oh, the Department of Player Safety knocked me out of the game, the series. I'm like, no, you did that. You did the thing that got you suspended. You know, it's not like you didn't, it's not like they just picked you out of a your name out of a hat and suspended you. You did a stupid thing and you cost your team. And instead of saying something like that, he again, you know, he's doubling down on being a victim here. When I think everyone is seeing past the whole thing about his family getting harassed. You know, I mean, I'm not going to sit here and ask, say, whether or not it's legitimate, but there are people who have brought it up, wondering if it was just sort of a way to sort of change the narrative, which it worked on, you know, we said it, we worked on CBC where everyone was, so poor Mark Scheifele. But, you know, the fact he doubled down on not taking responsibility for what he did, I think considering he's an assistant captain on the team, there's an incredible lack of maturity and leadership. And, you know, to me, if I heard him, if I was Department of Player Safety, I know you can't do it, but the fact that you can hear him after the fact blaming them and saying, you know, not taking responsibility for what he did, I'd almost be tempted to add more suspension for him to figure out, like, yeah, you, man, you messed up. Like, this isn't, I, you know, you're the only one that's at fault here. And, you know, not wanting to own up to that speaks to a lack of accountability with him, which I think, I don't know what it means, but it's something. It's showing me something about the guy who, you know, everyone points to now with Paul Byron when he got suspended for hitting Mackenzie Weegar. You know, he had that whole, he wrote something out saying, like, I did this hit. I'm not normally like this, but it happened. I got suspended. I feel bad. I hope he's okay. He did this whole thing. He was like, I messed up, pretty much. He had this whole thing of saying, like, I screwed up. I'm really sorry I did this to my team. I'm sorry I did this to this player. You know, I'm not usually like this, but, you know, it happened and I fully accept what happens to me, kind of thing. And you didn't get anything like that from Mark Scheifele. And I think, as you said, they had to parade out in front of the cameras and sort of defense the indefensible. And you could just see the team wasn't the same. They didn't have any, they had no pushback in any, game four they had a little bit, but as I mentioned, I mean, the second goal Carey Price let in was, I mean, woof, like it was really bad. But, you know, in all the games, they really had no answer to the Canadians, despite what, you know, some of the commentators might have been hoping. I mean, I'm not going to talk about Sportsnet again because we've talked about how we do not like their broadcast of a hockey game.
Out on Sportsnet. But like, I am out.
It's been a while, but yeah, it's... Anyway, but, you know, it's right. They had no pushback. They had no other gear to get to. And... You know, I mean, the most you saw it was in game one, when they kind of wouldn't let the Canadians sort of pull away, right? It was, you know, 2-1, 3-2, 4-3. Like, they kind of were hanging around. And that's when the empty net goal happened. That's when the Scheifele hit Evans. And since then, you know, the Jets scored, in the last three games, they scored three goals. They had nothing. They had nothing to push. And I honestly believe, like you mentioned, that was the biggest reason why the Jets were able to be swept, because they, again, they looked defeated because one of their best players did a really stupid thing and it messed up their season. And yeah, so that's, I mean, we don't need to like continue, I think, to sit on it. I mean, I think I just went a little bit of a run here with what I'm saying, but you know, it was a big reason why I think they had no pushback, was just seeing someone do something so stupid it just sucked the air out of that room.
Yeah.
And they were never able to get it back.
So what's the over under, Connor, on someone from Vegas going down in the first game of the third round?
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know either. But look, Montreal Canadiens have earned their place in the third round. They have played inspired hockey, the best we've seen out of them for years and years and years. And the biggest thing, I think, is consistency. We have a defensive concept that seems to make sense. Yeah, they rely on their top four, and obviously there are questions now what that means with Petrie out for at least the first two games. But we have the right mix of youth and experience. Carey Price has had a phenomenal playoff so far. We hope that continues. How are you feeling about this matchup? I saw a lot of people suggest that Colorado might have been better for Montreal because the team seems to have a better handle on how to stop Stars. But I also heard that the Vegas team is built more like Montreal, and so theoretically they might be able to have an answer for a team like Vegas. Honestly, I didn't like either of the matches initially.
Yeah.
I've had to spend the last couple of days talking myself into the idea that Montreal matches up against Vegas. But what are your, just in the top headline, you know, what is your take on how Montreal matches up against Vegas?
It's going to be hard because I think Vegas is probably deeper than the other, than Winnipeg and Toronto across the board. I mean, they are not necessarily, not even, they're not as top heavy as Toronto is, but I think they have a bit more depth in terms of, like, you know, scoring spread out. I mean, I looked at the stats there. The Vegas stats, right? And they have a bunch of players contributing, you know? So it'll be interesting to see how they work. For me, I was always worried because Colorado, to me, played way more of a, I want to say a better version of the Maple Leafs. You know what I mean? It's like they play that up-tempo game, but they have more depth on the back end, I think, to make it, to make up for any, you know, deficiencies or any, you know, the defense can cover up some of the offensive fire wagon hockey they want to play or the quick offensive style they want to play. But I was like, you know, that Philip Grubauer in Nets would be an X factor because, you know, he's been having a pretty good season. But, you know, Grubauer or Price, I think you'd lean towards Carey Price every time. So that's where I was like, maybe they can exploit that. And I know it's not necessarily the same, but I feel like Montreal has had a bit of success against Colorado the last few years. So, I mean, for whatever, take that for what it's worth. But, I mean, they don't see each other very often, so... And to me, it was Nathan MacKinnon scares the bejesus out of me. He, I mean, you know, we live in Canada, so we get pumped up with Auston Matthews, and he's an amazing player. But I do think Nathan MacKinnon, because he plays in Colorado, because it's a Western team, because they're not on TV as much or they're on later, you don't see it. I think he is a better overall player. And I think his ability to dominate a game is a bit greater than Auston Matthews. And I'm not trying to, you know, take anything away from Auston Matthews. It's not the goal here. Auston Matthews, like I said, is a tremendous player. But I just feel like Nathan MacKinnon's ability to dominate a game might be a bit more than... It's just from what I've seen, right? Because I feel like, you know, the Western Conference is a... In general, is usually a bit... I think usually they have more tougher teams, I think. I just... Anyway, every time I've seen Nathan MacKinnon play, it's just...
Oh, he's a beast.
He's just incredible.
He's a beast.
He's amazing. Yeah. And so that kind of worried me. And I know it was like they have the top-heavy line there, but... So, I don't know. I think I was always leaning more towards Vegas because despite the fact that Vegas has been, you know, this crazy story where, they, you know, the first year they're in the Stanley Cup Finals, they made the conference finals three of their four seasons kind of thing. They have the same kind of issue, not issue, but, you know, as you said, you know, they're a bit deeper, but they're also not as many guys. They don't have as much, like, if you need a goal, right, it's hard. It's kind of like the Canadiens had that issue too. It's like, you know, they have a lot of guys who can contribute, but if you're in a situation where you need a guy to score, they don't necessarily have that guy either. I mean, they have guys that'll step up here and there, and that's, you know, that's not suggesting it can't happen, but they don't have a Nathan MacKinnon who can, like, okay, I'm gonna make this happen. And, you know, it doesn't always work with those guys too, but it just, I feel like Vegas, I mean, every team can be beat, but watching Vegas play, as I watched them quite a little bit, like I watched the series with Minnesota, and I watched a bit of the Colorado series. I mean, they aren't invincible. They're not, you know, obviously Tampa Bay is the elephant down the road that everyone's worried about. But yeah, Vegas can be had. I mean, we've seen Marc-Andre Fleury plays well, but he gives up a ton of rebounds, and the Canadiens have found this willingness and ability to go to the front of the net, so there's something they can exploit there. I mean, they have Pietrangelo on defense, but I don't think their defense is incredibly deep. So I think the matchup, and I think someone put the size matchup, and it's, you know, they're about the same average size, the teams. So, I mean, it'll be interesting to see how it goes. I think the more, as you said, I'm kind of talking myself into this, but I think I always kind of like the matchup with Vegas a bit better. So yeah, it'll be fun. I mean, it'll be interesting to see how the Canadiens react to a full building, which they haven't had to deal with all year. So, you know, there's that little wrinkle, you know? Will they be able to, so, you know, it's, I know teams should be used to it, but it's been over a year since anyone's been in a building, or the Canadian teams, or the Canadians in general, have been in a building with at full capacity, so. Oh, there's a lot of little wrinkles, but I'm actually okay with this matchup. I don't necessarily think it's going to be a cake. Obviously, it's not going to be a cakewalk, but, you know, I think like you, I kind of talked myself into Vegas being the more favorable matchup for the Canadians, even if it's, you know, me convincing myself. I think the more I thought about it before, I was more leaning towards a Vegas Habs kind of semifinal or whatever the heck this is.
Yeah, I definitely think it's going to be a tough series. I think. Vegas is a forecheck team, and I think our defenders are going to be hit more than I think they have in any other series. Obviously, Toronto was a puck possession team. Winnipeg normally was strong on forecheck, but they could also beat you carrying the puck into the zone. But, you know, obviously that last series, the Jets didn't really show up, so I don't know that our D had to take as many hits as I think they're going to in this series. The way, I mean, let's just go through position by position. Price versus Fleury. I have to give the edge to Price for all the reasons that you said. He's having a phenomenal playoffs. Fleury has a tendency to make some not great, amazing saves, but also weird, I don't know, weird choices around where his body is and what he reaches for and what he plays versus doesn't. And obviously you have the rebound issue.
And he has a tendency to give up some softies. I mean, I know every goalie does, but Fleury, from what I saw, even against Colorado and even Minnesota, like there are some pucks find their way through him at sometimes. And I mean, even if you think back, I know it's forever ago, but when the Canadians beat the Penguins in 2010, you know, he was giving up some pretty awful goals. So, you know, it's also something to keep in mind. He can't have, like you said, part of the mental farts. He seems to have them a bit more.
So I think I go Price on that. In terms of the defensive core, I think it's hard to know just because we don't really know how long Petrie is out. I think with Petrie out, I have to give the edge a little bit to Vegas. They're young. Obviously, they have Petrangelo, so they have experience on that. But they do have some younger D that have been playing pretty well. I'm curious to see how that matchup takes place. But at least right now, with Petrie out the first two games, I think I have to give the edge a little bit to Vegas. Do you agree or disagree with that?
I think 1-6, they're deeper, especially if the Canadians are going to run their, you know, short bench, I guess, in terms of the D, instead of rotating in a couple of guys, instead of having a bit more regular shifts for everybody. You know, having guys like a guy like Alec Martinez and Pietrangelo, guys who have won, is going to help. And like, I think Pietrangelo is the best defenseman in the series, yeah. So that will go a long way. And he's been pretty clutch for them, you know, this playoffs. He's been playing really well, so. I'm with you. I think the defense, you have to, even with Petro, I would lean a bit more to Vegas. But as you said, they do have a bit of youth, which, you know, you never know how they're going to react in certain situations. So, and the Canadians have sort of, so far in this playoffs, have made a lot of hay taking advantage of some, you know, young D mistakes.
Right.
So hopefully they can keep doing that. So,
when I look at the,
I don't think it's a huge gap between the two of them, but I do think Vegas on balance has it.
So. Yeah, I think the slight edge, at least right now, and we'll see through a couple games what we can figure out about how that decor is holding up. I think when I look at the forwards, the first two lines, I'm going to call it a push. I think obviously that top line on Vegas and you know, there's going to be a lot of ink spilled about the return of Pacioretty to Montreal, and TSN 690 still has that Presti ad they're running. I'm Max Pacioretty. Come find out why I built my house with Presti. You know, wooden patches. But I do worry about that line heating up. But I think on balance, in terms of the first two lines, I'm going to call it a push. The last two lines, in terms of three and four, especially the fourth line, I have to give a slight edge to the Canadians. And I think if I'm going to circle one line that I think needs to produce and be consistently good, it's that third line for Montreal. And I'm going to be fascinated to see how well they can take advantage of sort of line 3 and 4 on Vegas. How do you see the forward matchup?
I think you have it pretty down. I think the first two, I mean, yeah, they are very similar. I mean, I'm assuming you're saying Suzuki, Toffoli, Caulfield, and Deno, Gallagher, and Lekkinen.
Yes, those are your first two, yeah.
Yeah, and then Anderson, Kotkaniemi, and Armia, and Anderson, Kotkaniemi, and Byron, and the old man. I think the old man, the fourth one.
Yeah.
The Armia, Perry, and Stahl, because I know that the Golden Knights do run their fourth line, and it's more of a traditional fourth line with Ryan Reeves and some of those bigger guys, but they don't play them a lot, and I know they can't. So I think the Canadians might have a bit of an advantage there because they can roll their four lines, and you don't necessarily feel like you're going to get taken advantage of as much, at least so far in the playoffs, when you have those guys out there. I mean, obviously you don't want them against the top line, but you feel comfortable playing them against the other third line. And they have been making things work and making things happen. So I think that, and I think if you look at any team that goes on a run, you have a line that sort of overachieves a bit, or it comes up with clutch plays, and that's been the line for the Canadians without a doubt. And I think I'm with you. I think that the bottom two lines the Canadians are going to have to make some hay, especially if you're going to commit to Deno shutting down Stone, you know, and Gallagher and Armia, or even Evans if he makes his way back into the lineup. I don't know. I mean, that's another question. Do you fidget with the lineup? I don't know. But, you know, there is also, like, everyone's talking about the return of Max Pacioretty, like he was somehow done wrong by the Canadians, even though he demanded a trade. I'm interested to see how Nick Suzuki reacts to playing a team that traded him. Or, I know, it doesn't look like he's going to get in, but also Thomas Tatar, who had a bit of a not a great experience with the Vegas Golden Knights when he was traded there, when he played with them. You know, there are all these little plot lines of, like, revenge.
Yeah.
I don't see Max Pacioretty revenge. I mean, obviously, you know, you want to stick it to your former team, but again, it's not like the Canadians hung him out to dry. He wanted to leave, and he apparently asked for a trade more than once. So, I mean, the reasons for wanting to be traded are, we'll never know, but, you know, it's not like the Canadians, you know, booted him to the curb. He wanted to leave. So I'm not necessarily going to buy that narrative of him, you know, feeling done wrong by the Canadians somehow. It's interesting. I mean, if the Canadians can keep doing what they've been doing to the other team's sort of best players, I think it's going to be tough for Vegas, because I don't think they can count on their bottom six like the Canadians can. I agree that the matchup is a lot closer than people want to give it credit for, just because you hear some of the names, and, you know, Vegas has been, as I said, this sort of Western Conference powerhouse, you know, Stanley Cup final, 3 conference finals in 4 years. So people are just sort of automatically leaning towards Vegas, and you could argue that they had the tougher path. I mean, I don't think the plan for Vegas was to go 7 games against the Wild. Last year, I don't think they were expecting to lose to Dallas. So I think there's something about playing a certain style, like, and that can frustrate them, and if you have to take advantage of it, you know, and the Canadians so far have been doing that, you know, playing a bit stifling and coming up with very opportunistic goals, which is, the opportunistic goals part has always been a little bit something that the Canadians have been missing in recent years, but for whatever reason so far in these playoffs, it's been good. They've been finding a way to get those big goals. So, you know, they have to keep, obviously it's got to keep going on. Obviously they're going to need a bit of luck, just like every team needs luck to win in the playoffs. I really kind of hope that there isn't some kind of big injury or crazy play that results in someone, a key player, getting, just because it's this narrative now that people have kind of taken on, well, they wouldn't be doing anything, you know. Oh, the Canadians wouldn't have beat Toronto if Tavares was there, or they wouldn't have beat the Jets with Scheifele. And it's like, well, part of it is, you know, that's sort of a rabbit hole you don't want to go down, because pretty much every team that has won ever, you could sort of find, you know, if this team was hurt when they played them. So, you know, and so it's just kind of ridiculous, but I'm getting annoyed with that narrative, you know, like, you know, somehow Toronto didn't win 3 games without Tavares and then blew it, or, you know, and it's all, anyway, I hope the Canadians, if they win, look, I don't want anyone to get hurt ever, but if someone does, or someone gets suspended or whatever, I just don't like this narrative on teams that are kind of crapping on the Habs because they're actually doing well. There's just, you know, like there's this narrative that, well, they're getting lucky.
Yeah, I don't worry. I don't worry about any of that, Connor, because we're in the social media era, which means that anybody who wants to complain about anything will find a reason to. This is why you play the games. Going back and saying, well, if Tavares hadn't got hit or Scheifele wasn't a moron, they would have lost. That's why you play the games. This isn't, you know, some weird fantasy league where you just take the, you know, overall ratings of these players and put it through some sort of NHL 21 simulation and see what happens. This is why you love sport, because the unexpected happens, and sometimes that goes for your team and sometimes it goes against. And, you know, Price was taken out by a Chris Kreider, which changed the dimensions of that team. Yeah. And it's just what happens. It's just what happened. I think for me, I am looking at Kotkaniemi to step up and play this kind of hockey he's been playing in the playoffs. But if I'm circling one player, it's Josh Anderson. I want to see him throwing his body around. I want to see him taking the puck to the net. I think he's been, after his great regular season and the abbreviated season that was, you know, 2020, 2021, I think there's been some skepticism about what he can bring in the playoffs. But I'm going to hold fast on this line. When he is putting his head down and charging the net, it opens up so many other opportunities. And that's exactly the kind of player that the Canadians have needed and not had. It's exactly the kind of player that can really change the direction of a game. And so I'm really looking for him to have a big series. Obviously, Price is going to have to be incredible. But Canadians might be underdogs going into the season. And, of course, according to any betting over-unders that there are, you know, the Vegas is favored to win. I think you had to put up $400 to win $100, just saying that Montreal was going to win the series. I don't think it's as much of a mismatch as some people think. I think if Montreal, it's a team game, and if Montreal can keep up its team play, get a little bit lucky, but also take advantage of the gaps that are going to emerge on this Vegas team. I think we have a shot, and that just to be able to say that we have a shot to make it to a Stanley Cup final should make us all really, really happy.
For sure. I mean, thinking back when the playoffs started, I mean, everyone did not have a good feeling about the first round, and then a lot of people were saying if they make it out, I mean, they're going to play the real teams. So I think everyone was a bit nervous, but you know. There was a bit of this sort of, and I wouldn't say it's even a narrative, that the Canadian division was not a very strong division, and I would agree with that. But again, seeing the way they've come together and they're playing very much like they played at the beginning of the year when they looked very, like a juggernaut or whatever. But I think there's a lot more quiet, I'm not quiet, confidence about how the team can perform, as opposed to, I think, I don't know, maybe if we said this was going to happen at the start, you'd be like, oh, you're going to make the semifinals against Vegas. You'd be like, oh, God, that's going to be ugly. I don't think anyone feels that way right now. So that's obviously, like you said, where we started and where we are now. It's two very different things. Positive, obviously. Another thing to keep an eye on is the Canadian special teams. The power play has been heating up and playing very well, you know, the last 2 weeks. You know, since about game 6 of the Toronto series, they've been playing very well. You know, even when they're not scoring, they're still looking a little dangerous. And that's something very nice to see, and something we've talked about saying could be a difference in, you know, having an average power play would have been the difference in some seasons in terms of making the playoffs. Yeah. So nice to see it in the playoffs coming up big when they need it and not necessarily being, you know, I was talking about it with my friends when we were watching game 4. It's, you know, the power play is no longer this thing you wish they could decline.
Right.
Where, you know, in the regular season and stuff, great, Canadians have a power play. Great. It's going to just suck the life out of them. And the penalty kill is also
unbelievable.
You know, their special teams has been amazing in the playoffs so far. And that is, I think in Winnipeg, they said they outscored the Jets. Like they have scored, what, 3 shorthanded goals against the Jets? Shorthanded, I think the Canadians' penalty kill outscored the Jets' power play in that series.
Yeah, I think in the playoffs so far, they have scored more goals on the penalty kill than allowed goals. And that's insane. Yeah.
So that's enough. If they can keep that going, too, if they can be that up. I mean, obviously, you can't rely on shorthanded goals, but I just mean Vegas seems like they have a potent power play. If you can also keep them at bay a little bit, like they did against Toronto. I mean, I know Winnipeg, we spoke about how they're kind of had no life, but you know, if they can keep the Vegas Golden Knights, their penalty kill can still be good, and you can sort of take away that other aspect of their game that, you know, every team likes, you know, power plays are very important for every team. If you can sort of nullify that or minimize the impact of the Vegas power play, you know, that's another thing to keep in mind, because the special teams are coming up big in the right spots. I'm not really sure about how Vegas has been playing, but you know, just from the Canadians, and because they were such a mess all through the year, both penalty kill and power play, it's really good to see that they're finding their footing right now in the playoffs, and you know, at the most important time of the year.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and just to underline that point, the Canadians are first with their penalty kill. Vegas is 12th. So, okay. You know, not terrible, but what Montreal's been able to pull off has been, you know, arguably game-changing. And it's, look, I think there is an argument to recognize that the North was not as strong as some of the other divisions. There's no point trying to deny that or make excuses for it. But the regular season's over. The playoffs are well underway, and we have seen very clearly that the teams that show up in the playoffs are not necessarily the same teams from the regular season. And I'm going to be looking for the first 10 minutes of the first period tomorrow night, Monday night in Vegas, to get a sense of where this team is at. I think your point about how they confront a stadium full of screaming fans, especially Vegas, which is, you know, hasn't been around that long, but it has really generated a passionate fan base and a production value. I'm not going to say that rivals the Montreal Canadiens, because what the Canadiens are able to do with a full house in the Bell Centre is a really special thing. But, you know, they've really embraced the theatrics and leaned into it. And I think if nothing else, it's going to be great television Monday night. And hopefully the Canadiens can show up for the game and get going.
Yeah, I think the other concern is for the Canadiens, like we spoke about the Jets, is kind of having the long layoff, right? It's hard to, like I said, it's hard to sort of get back into when you've been off for so long, and the other team, I know, granted, Vegas will be off for a couple of days too. I think it'll be 4 days for them also, so it won't be like, you know, they're coming right off a game. But yeah, I think it's good that they had people come to talk to the team about the importance of like how to keep your focus after being off for a while. Like Bob Gainey spoke to the team, I think, on Friday, just to sort of say like, sort of help them keep their focus, because it can be, I'd imagine it's very hard to sort of keep that playoff focus when you're just practicing. As I said, it's hard to simulate that intensity in practice against your own team. But yeah, I'm with you. The first 10 minutes is going to be very telling if the Canadiens can, I think, weather the storm. And it's weird because we've both thought that there'd be games where they'd have to weather the storm more than they have. So maybe that is in part due to their team game and the way they play. It kind of just sucks a bit of the life out of the game, maybe, which I don't have a problem with if you're on the road. Or in general, if you win, who cares? But, you know, if they can weather that onslaught, it's not going to be an onslaught, but, you know, that wave of Vegas kind of playing in front of the home fans and everyone's jacked up because of the intros and the pregame shenanigans and, like, you know, if they can weather that and make the fans kind of sit down and get a little quiet. And so far they've been able to, well, granted, they haven't really had to play in front of fans, but they've been able to sort of quiet the teams they've played down early on for the most part. I think that'll be it'll be a very good sign, I think. You know, I mean, we've talked about how I think the first period lately for the Canadiens has been very telling about how the game will go. And I think I'm going to keep to that. I mean, I was talking about it with my father-in-law. I'm like, I haven't had a really strong feeling about any series either way that they've had. I mean, I know we both said, like, you know, I want the Canadiens to win, obviously, but like, all playoffs, I haven't had a dread feeling or a, like, overly positive feeling. I've just been kind of in the middle. So there's that. So I still feel that, so I'm wondering if that's a good sign for me.
So let's do a little recap. I called the Montreal Canadiens famously in seven against Toronto. Might have been the height of my hockey prediction career. I called the Habs in five against the Jets. So obviously I was off there. After game one, the Jets never really put it back together, and the Habs won in overtime in game four to sweep the series. So remind us of your predictions, Connor. Did you have the Habs against the Leafs?
I said Habs in six. You talked me into it. But I didn't like you. I didn't want to copy your pick, and I had Habs in six again, also against the Jets. So I'm living in that six game series apparently. So I'm probably gonna have to move off it for this one. But you know, we both were predicting the Habs, and I mean, it's weird because you know you look at it on paper and you look at how the teams played in the season, and I know as you mentioned, it's a different animal in the playoffs. But like you know, Montreal shouldn't have a chance, right? But then there is this weird sort of thing with his team this year that feels like it's, you know, use the word destiny, but like there is something going on with the Canadiens right now, and it's hard to put a name to it, but just something like, you know, things have been going their way clearly, but like the right things are, like I said, like, you know, the power play and the penalty kill coming to life at the right time, guys coming up with big goals at the right time. It has this feeling of like putting it together at the right time. And, you know, as much as my heart always wants the Canadiens to win, you know, my head obviously doesn't always work that way. But, you know, it feels a bit more, it's weird because like I said, you can't put I can't touch it, but I'm going with the Canadiens to win the series, and I'm going to go with it in... I'm going to stick with six. You know what? That's my thing. It's Canadiens in six.
Yeah, I got to go Canadiens in six, too. I think this is the toughest team that they've faced, Toronto notwithstanding, because I don't think they really showed up for the first couple games of that series. Or, sorry, games two and three, for sure. I'm going to call Habs in six. I think all the things that you say are right. I think there's something about... Look, I think we're going to start seeing, like, the mystique of the Montreal Canadiens. We're going to get the M words, the
ghosts.
Yeah, the rising up. It's going to be the... I'm not sure if I love the idea of the zombie Habs, but some sort of, like, the spirit, the esprit de corps. We need some bon mot en français to explain exactly what's going on with this team, but... It does feel like something's happening. And look, the greatest part about all this is that being underdogs every series just makes those wins a little more special. And it makes the losses, if they ever do come, a little bit more manageable. But it's utterly fantastic to be in June and still be able to cheer for the Habs. I love nothing more than to wake up with the kids in the morning and show them the recap of the night before when the Canadiens win. They're so into it. My wife, you're not going to believe this, Connor. My wife, who is from Southern California, who didn't know, who when I started talking to her about hockey, she assumed I meant field hockey, is now listening to TSN 690 on her own and yelling back at the announcers. I swear to God, I came in from working in the yard. She was listening to a TSN 690 hit and arguing with the announcer. And I was like, so she's this fever is, it's spreading.
She fully converted her. Good job. You got her.
I do what I can. It happens rarely, but I'm going to take the wins when I can get them, just like the Montreal Canadiens.
There you go. I was just staying with the ghosts, though, and there was the lore when they played at the Montreal Forum that there were the ghosts of great players past that would sort of will the Canadiens to win games that maybe they shouldn't have or go on these kind of runs. So there was always a bit of this narrative that when they moved to the Molson Center, now the Bell Center, that the ghosts never came, and that's why they haven't had much success in the Bell Center. But now everyone's sort of saying maybe the ghosts have finally made their way over. Like, just sort of to add to, as you said, it's part of the mystique of the Canadiens, this sort of, like we said, we can't put a word name on it, but this sort of, well, I guess mystique is the word, but this sort of thing about the Canadiens that they turn up in big spots to make things happen, and it's nice to see, and it's nice to have that feeling, I think, it's weird because, you know, when they went on their runs, I mean, obviously in 2014 with Carey Price going out in the first game, it really, that series was kind of done at that point. But, I mean, 2010, it was disappointing to see them go through the Capitals and the Penguins, you know, the best team in the NHL, and then they, the defending Stanley Cup champions, and then they play the Flyers and just sort of,
right,
you know, crap the bed. Right. And there's a bit of a different feeling, I think, around this team. You know, it wasn't as, it's not, I mean, I guess maybe we're also a bit biased because of what we saw with the Jets. But it doesn't feel like they're just hanging on in games. Like, they're not hanging on for dear life and hoping something goes right. They're actually pushing play, which is nice to see. So, yeah, I mean, look, game one's tomorrow night at 9 o'clock, and I'm not necessarily a fan of how they've scheduled the games, where it seems to all favor Vegas in terms of, you know, 9 p.m. in Vegas, which is fine, and then 8 p.m. in Montreal, which is...
which is 5 p.m. in Vegas. So it's they're splitting the difference, I guess, for the TV rights. But I'm glad to see that we're on... well, we're not actually on NBC the whole time. USA has it. I don't know if our listeners are doing this, but can I just once again make a plug for syncing the game to Dan Robertson on TSN 690. I'm watching the Euro 2020, and the British, the way they call games is so special. And there really isn't another example of it. I mean, I think you could argue baseball in the heyday had some really great announcers, and you could listen and learn something. But the only analogy I've found for British announcers in soccer, or football as they call it over there, is Dan Robinson and Sergio Mommesso on TSN 690. The way they call a game, it's informed. They're not homers. They definitely love the Canadians, but they also call them out. And I don't know. It's a special thing. And, yeah, it's a bit of a pain in the ass. You got to get good with your pause button and all that other stuff. But rather than listen to whoever brodels they have going on, I just the announcing at NBC, I'm sorry, but, like, I can't listen to the NBC USA. I just can't do it. So find an – I guess you guys are Sports Night. Everything is – in Canada comes through on the Sportsnet CBC feed. But if that's not working for you, you have options in this day and age.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, like I said, since we've started watching the games, like FaceTiming with my friends, I kind of just have the TV on mute.
Right.
So I don't have to listen to anybody, which is kind of nice. But yeah, the announcers on Sportsnet, I mean, I used to like Chris Cuthbertson. He's the guy who's been calling the Habs.
He does the international stuff okay, I think.
Yeah, no, even when he was on, back in the day when he was on CBC, and even when he was on TSN, I don't find him, usually he's even keeled, but there's just listening to some of the stuff that's been going on in the last two series when I have been listening, it's just, okay, well, we've talked about it, right? But it's just not good in terms of, like, talking about the play in a balanced way.
Yeah.
It's very frustrating to sort of, you know, certain things get over exaggerated in terms of how great they were, and then some things are downplayed, and, like, anyway, it's just frustrating to have to listen to it. So, and then in French, it's not much better here either. So, you know, that usually it's not on RDS anymore, it's on another channel, and I don't like their style either. Not, but like I said, I'm not really listening anymore, so it's helped with my enjoyment, because I don't get as annoyed listening to the stupid people on TV talking, because they can really get me upset during a broadcast.
It just takes you out of it, right? If bad calls take you out of it. So, Connor, both of us have the Habs in six. Obviously, this is a Habs podcast. Obviously, we are fans first and analysts second. But we both seem to have a good feeling that this is the team and has the right mix of solid D, outstanding goalie, the right mix of age and youth and exuberance on the forward lines, and I'm, for one, I'm excited to watch tomorrow. It's going to be a little bit of a late night, but hopefully that adrenaline will keep me pumping.
For sure, and yeah. The other thing is the key scoring from everyone across the lineup, right? It's not one line carrying the load. It's everyone's contributing at the right time. So, like we said, there's a bit of a mystique feeling around this team, and we don't want to necessarily get ahead of ourselves and use the, you know, the big words like predetermined or fate or anything like
the
that.
The D word?
Yes. But it is good to have this positive feeling with the Canadians. And it's been a while. And let's, as I've been saying, I'm just going to ride this wave till whatever it takes me, because right now it's all gravy. And with that, I'm Connor LaPalme signing off for the Last Word on Habs podcast. Monday night, game one, Stanley Cup semifinals, I guess is what we're going to call it. But yeah, go Habs, go. Let's keep the wave going and crash through Vegas and onto the finals.
The gravy goes on your French fries. Go Habs, go.
Bye.
This has been the Last Word on Habs podcast, brought to you by the Last Word on Sports Network. Join us next week. Until then, see you on the ice.